A Parallax Pictures production.
For some odd reason, lost in the mists of time, there's an extraordinary shortage of last names in Wales. Almost everyone seems to be a Williams, a Jones, or an Evans. To avoid widespread confusion, Welsh people often add an occupation to a name. For example, there was Williams the petroleum, and Williams the death. There was Jones the bottle, and Jones the prize cabbage, which described his hobby and his personality. Evans the bacon, and Evans the end of the world. But one man's name was a puzzle. And it wasn't until I was 10 years old that I asked my grandfather about the man with the longest and most enigmatic name of all.
The Englishman who went up a hill but came down a mountain? Now there's a long name for you, and a long story. You are not going to fidget, are you? For this is a story, an epic story. Yes, epic.
Hugh Grant, Tara Fitzgerald, and Colm Meaney. The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain. Ian McNeice. Ian Hart. Kenneth Griffith. A carefully drawn, detailed map of Europe and the British Isles. Zooming in on Wales. Director of Photography, Vernon Layton, BSc. Editor, David Martin. Producer, Sarah Curtis. Written and directed by Christopher Monger. An open top car drives through the rolling countryside.
It must have been 1917 on a Sunday when two retired army officers arrived in Ferngharu. The younger man, Hanson, was just starting to enjoy life, having recently left hospital after service in France. However, his superior, George Garrard, had been retired to the Ordnance Survey in the hope that this would help the morale of his troops, who had been driven to drink by his irksome personality.
Their car draws up in a small village and Anson knocks on a front door.
Many men had gone to the Great War and the rest of the village was in chapel. All except Morgan the Goat, of course.
You fucking...
At an upstairs window...
Excuse me, does anyone here speak English?
Well, English, are you, huh? That would explain everything. Well, it's Sunday. They're all in chapel.
We were just wondering if,
Charming. We'll press on, I think.
The man emerges from the front door.
Well, do you want to come in or don't you?
As I said, the rest of the village was in chapel, including mothers with babies. Since the young men went to war, there seemed to be a lot of ginger-haired babies. But in those hard times, no one seemed to mind, except Reverend Jones, of course.
Are all of the wicked men just in Germany? Wouldn't that be nice if all the wicked men were on the battlefields of France?
Oh, Reverend Jones was in fine form that day. Nearly every Sunday he preached against the war and Morgan the Goat, in that order, though he never mentioned Morgan the Goat by name, of course.
They are also among us here, in this very village.
What's yours?
Well, it's very kind. I'll have a pint of bitter, thank you.
The red-haired Morgan dashes off, midway through pouring the pint.
Pleasant enough sort of place, isn't it?
I suppose so, considering it's Wales.
A valued guest. A regular. Very particular. Refined, even.
He dashes back upstairs.
He's turning out to be quite a busy sport.
A middle-aged policeman with dark hair and moustache takes a seat at the bar.
Oh, I hate December.
Ah, morning, Sergeant.
Morning. My name is Garrard, George Garrard. We're staying here at the inn.
I guess that from your luggage.
English, are you? Looking for more coal, I suppose.
No. Cartographer, actually.
Sort of surveyors, if you like.
We make maps. We're here to measure the mountains.
Very useful, I'm sure.
Look, I'll have you know it's an important part of the war effort. One must know one's terrain.
Well, you've come to the right place with your measurings. There's some terrain. That's a mountain. First mountain in Wales.
What's it called?
Llangarw.
Goodness gracious, these Welsh names. Would you mind saying that again?
Llangarw, man. The simple. Listen, I'll write it down for you now, so you can get it right on your map, Twins.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Of course, it will only appear if it's over 1,000 feet.
Don't be tough, man. That's well over 1,000.
Mm. Well, then.
Morgan drinks Anson's pint himself.
Excuse me. I think...
You ready for another?
You can keep the change, Mr. Morgan.
Thank you, Miss Elizabeth. Thank you very much.
Ooh, that Morgan.
Sorry, could I please have a pint of bitter?
No need to get all English about it.
Reverend Jones greets the smartly dressed villagers as they emerge from chapel. Pushing along his bicycle, the sergeant meets some of them coming the other way.
The English are in the pub, and they say they come to measure the mountain, man.
All this way just to measure our mountain. Measuring it?
Well, who needs to know the height of our mountain, I am?
Empty pints, then Anson and George snoozing in the pub garden.
Another drink, gentlemen?
No, thank you.
Most hospitable.
Yes, no thanks.
Anything else I can be getting you? All right, then. I'll be taking the dog for a walk. See you in the morning.
Oh, there is one thing. I know it's hard to find staff in this time of war, but we will require an assistant.
Someone quite strong, preferably.
I think you will find that His Majesty's Ordnance Survey will provide equitable remuneration.
They'll pay, but not very much.
Oh. Well, those that aren't in France are down the mines. Of course, there's Johnny Shellshocked.
Sorry, who?
Johnny Jones, back from the war. Gone little doodlally tap. He lives with his sister, poor thing.
Oh, I see.
But strong. As long as you don't expect him to talk. Or think.
We will require his services just as a porter.
Oh, well. Johnny should be able to manage that.
Perhaps we could meet him.
Oh, absolutely. First thing in the morning.
He seems to have rather an impatient dog, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
The picturesque rolling hills and valleys. Early morning mist giving way to warm sunshine. Outside a house, a young man in his 20s in waistcoat and cap stands clapping his hands at a tortoise moving slowly at his feet.
Why not?
Because he's not ready.
All he has to do is hold a pole straight.
Don't be tough. No one gets paid for just holding a pole. Unless you're Betty from Cardiff.
Don't start that again.
Megan said she saw her. All tarted up again in the pub on Saturday.
She's been advising me on the refurbishment of my establishment.
Refurbishing your establishment? I've never heard it called that before.
Morgan ambles over to the young man, who's standing with his eyes closed and his face registering no expression.
Morning, Johnny. Got some English staying at the pub. Making maps, daft beggars. They need help, of course. Someone to carry what they can't or won't. There's money. So shall I tell them you're interested? Well, come along to the pub later. All right?
Ah, good morning, Reverend Jones. I see God's in his heaven and all's well with the world.
Have you no shame?
No. I can't think where I've left it.
Morgan passes by the Reverend, and the old man stops for a moment to watch him. Wearing a bowler hat and black overcoat, Reverend Jones walks through the village, then up to the school.
When does a hill become a mountain?
I think it must be a comparative term. I mean, you take the Himalayas of India. There they have mountains of 10,000 feet, which are referred to, I believe, as foothills.
But take our mountain, that isn't a foothill.
Well, again, placed in the Alps, it wouldn't even be considered a hillock.
But it isn't in the Alps, it's here in Wales.
Quite.
So who decides on British maps?
Mr. Davis, now this in confidence. They're saying...
Are the English?
Yes. They're saying that it must be over 1,000 feet.
Really? I'd imagined 5,000 was the standard.
But how high is Panangaro? Is it over 1,000? Over 2,000?
1,000? I'd always imagined it was a few hundred.
Oh, dear. Oh, and I thought you were an educated man. Dear, dear.
The first mountain in Wales? Yes, it is something we have boasted about since time immemorial. We didn't have the biggest mountains of the north, nor the beautiful mountains of mid-Wales. But we could claim that we lived in the shadow of the first mountain inside the Welsh border. These mountains have defeated every invader. This is where the Britons fled when they were invaded by the Romans, the Angles, the Saxons, the Vikings, the Normans. Oh, yes. They all invaded this island of Britain, but they've never taken the mountains from us. They've never taken ancient Britain.
At work, studying his papers and making notes, Anson follows George over the brow of a hill. George is lying down on the grass.
My God, those last stretches are steeper than they look. I hardly think that your pedometer reading will be much use.
Well, not much, but nevertheless.
So, can you see either of our trig points from here?
No. But I can see those two men again.
Two figures in the distance.
Rather ominous. Reminds me of surveying Abyssinia in 88.
Come on, boys. Any more bets? This may be your last chance.
2,300.
2,300. Oh, Williams the Petroleum. Good man, good man.
Right, Anthony. Oh, well. Same as you, I imagine.
Yes. More or less.
Good.
The very men we need. Mr. Garrett, sir. Settle our bet. How high is our mountain?
I'm sorry, I can't say yet. We've only just done the first recce.
You must have some idea.
Well, nothing accurate as yet, I'm afraid. Good night.
Night. Look, I may be wrong, but after 25 years of doing this sort of thing, I doubt it. I would say about 930 feet. Gentlemen?
930?
In Anson's room.
Come in.
Mr. Anson!
Oh, Mr. Morgan, perhaps you can help. Do you know, who those two gentlemen down there in the street are? They've been following us all day.
Thomas Tupp and Thomas Tupp too. Local farmers. They're not quite with it. Touched. Oh. Stupid. Tupp. That's Thomas Tupp on the left and his brother, Thomas Tupp.
Sorry?
Oh, he's Thomas Tupp too.
Yes.
Or is it the other way around?
Well, whichever. That's fine. It was just we were beginning to get a bit worried.
Oh, quite harmless. Now, I think I can safely say I'm speaking on behalf of all of my patrons, villagers to a man, when I say I feel that, we feel that your Mr. Garrett's done a pretty shoddy job measuring Thunungaru, which is to any trained eye a mountain.
Beg your pardon?
Oh, accepted.
No. I mean, sorry, I'm not quite following what you.
930 feet, man. I hope he doesn't intend sticking to this obviously euphonious measurement.
No, the thing is, Mr. Morgan, we haven't really measured your mountain yet. We've merely made a preliminary reconnoiter, which has yielded a very approximate figure.
Click, 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 click.
All the way to the top.
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, no wonder they bloody got it wrong.
And then finally, we'll make measurements using this. But to use this thing, which we call the transit, we have to be able to clearly view the summits of Newton Beacon and Whitchurch Hill.
But they're not mountains.
Oh, no, they're not mountains, Mr. Morgan, they're not. But Her Majesty's Ordnance Survey of 1887 established their height and the distance between them and the distance between them and Thunungaru. And given those measurements, we should be able to ascertain the true height of Thunungaru, this elevation.
Ah, so you're saying it probably isn't 930 feet?
Well, I'd be very surprised if today's measurement was accurate, yes.
Ah, good. Well, I'll see you in the bar, then.
Yes. You should bear in mind, Mr. Morgan, that your mountain, whatever, may very well be more than 930 feet.
Yes!
But it may also be less.
Less!
All this fuss over what? Is it a hill? Is it a mountain? Perhaps it wouldn't matter anywhere else. But this is Wales. The Egyptians built pyramids. The Greeks built temples. But we did none of that because we had mountains. Yes, the Welsh were created by mountains. Where the mountain starts, there starts Wales. If this isn't a mountain... Well, if this isn't a mountain, then Anson might just as well redraw the border and put us all in England. God forbid.
Outside the inn, Anson and George are working while Morgan sits nearby. Thomas Toop and his brother approach them.
Good morning, Thomas. And Thomas?
Good morning.
What can I do you for?
We've come to see the men who are measuring the mountain.
Well, hello. This is Mr. Garrett, and my name's Anson.
And as you can see, we are terribly busy.
This is my brother, Thomas Toop, and I am Thomas Toop too.
We've no learning, and most people say we're Toop, but we're not so Toop as to not know that we're Toop.
Huh? Oh, how novel. So it was very nice to meet you.
We would like to know how you intend to measure the mountain.
We would like to watch, and we'll be happy to help carry your rule.
Really? Well, thank you, that's splendid.
They don't call him Toop for nothing.
The two Thomases emerge over the brow of a hill, carrying the equipment, followed by George and Anson. As they clear the top of the hill, they discover a large crowd of villagers are there already. Children are running around playing, while smartly dressed adults chat to one another. As the two Thomases lead the Englishman towards them, George surveys the large gathering in amazement.
Good God!
Still here, boys?
Where are we?
Thomas, I'm not altogether happy about you carrying this equipment for the English. Are you suitably rewarded?
I don't know, sir, but I put it down.
Morning.
Morning.
We're here for the historical measurement. Have you met the Reverend Jones?
The stony-faced Reverend holds out his hand.
How do you do?
You'll do your best now, I'm sure.
The villagers cluster around Anson and George as they get to work, using the transit, a telescope-like instrument. The viewfinder of the transit pans across the mountainous landscape.
Well, what's the result?
Oh, please, please, we have hours of calculations ahead of us.
I'm afraid you'll have to be a little patient, but we should know this evening.
Now, excuse me, gentlemen. Oh, thank you. Please be careful.
And how do you know later?
Well, we've made measurements with those two hills, and we already know the height of Newton Beacon and Whitchurch Hill.
But how were they measured?
The same way, by comparing them with other hills.
But who measured the first hill? No. God, my boy, God.
That night, the pub did big business as all gathered to hear the result. All except Reverend Jones, of course, who wouldn't step into such a den of iniquity.
Cheaply, but...
Same again?
No, I wish to change my bet.
You can't do that.
Well, then I wish to place another one.
Feeling any better?
No. No, I've got a shocking headache. I think I should lie down.
Do you, want me to tell them, then?
That's a splendid idea. Although it really should be me. On the other hand, this might be a good chance for you to get practice talking to the natives. You don't know, and it might be handy.
Yes, of course.
980 feet.
Objection sustained. I'm not taking any bets under 1,000 feet. Traitor.
Traitor?
Bradur. Are you sure you haven't got any English blood in you?
Outside the pub.
Any result?
No.
They're not going to like it very much, are they?
No, all the same, these figures are science. And what is science, Mr. Anson?
Oh, yes, I always forget that one, don't I?
Oh, come on.
Science is dispassionate.
Exactly.
Anson comes apprehensively down the stairs into the bar.
Hey. Evening. Well, Mr. Morgan, with your permission. Gentlemen, we have now completed the survey of... and I have to inform you that it is 984 feet.
What?
Now, I realise that this may be a disappointment to you, but I would ask you to remember that it is just a measurement and in no way should detract from the beauty of or indeed your affection for this hill.
Hill?
Hill? Result? Tell me, do they have a result?
It's a hill.
The Reverend looked shell-shocked.
Perhaps it would have been different if there hadn't been a war. But this was 1917, and people were exhausted by loss. Those that were allowed to stay manned the pits, mining the coal that would fuel the ships. 24 hours a day they labored. Corners were cut. Coal was hacked hastily. And those who survived the trenches died for the coal. It was a sad time. Our friends had been taken, our sons, our husbands. A once close community was slowly being destroyed. How could we face those who survived if they returned to find no mountain? While they had fought the Germans, we had lost the mountain to the English. Our village had been ruined, and now they were taking our mountain and our Welshness.
Reverend Jones quickly fetches two officers from the police station.
village hall!
It did in the village hall! It did in the village hall!
The Reverend Jones is assembling a meeting at the village hall. Now.
What's that old coot think he's going to do? Raise the mountain?
He's going to organise an official complaint. Come on, please. Are you coming?
A complaint.
In the evening, locals file into the village hall.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Look, I propose a petition demanding the inclusion of Llan an Garw as the first mountain in Wales to be included on all of His Majesty's maps. And who's going to read this petition? Eh? Who's going to agree?
I don't think I need any advice from you, Mr. Morgan.
I haven't finished yet. I don't want Llan an Garw to be on the map because we beg for it, because we pleaded. No. If Llan an Garw has to be 1,000 feet, then I say let it be 1,000 feet. But 20 feet, that's all we need. A 20-foot tump and we have our mountain.
I'm not sure how legal that is.
Yes, or ethical. Legal? Ethical? Well, how legal was it to say that 1,000 feet is a mountain and 984 isn't? Huh? Do we call a short man a boy or a small dog a cat? No! This is a mountain, our mountain. And if it needs to be 1,000 feet, then by God, let's make it 1,000 feet.
I would prefer it, Mr. Morgan, if you did not take the Lord's name in vain. Yes, Ivor, go on, have a go. Morgan the goat. Sorry, Morgan. Morgan has a point. I have visited mountains that are topped by ancient burial chambers, and it is that full height which is measured. I see nothing wrong with adding to Llan an Garw.
In Rondavaw, there's a huge coal tip above the village, and that's on the maps.
Am I the only one that thinks this smacks of sharp practice, of cheating? What do we do? Lower one part of Llan an Garw to raise another?
Take it from your garden if it makes you feel better.
Yes, yes, it would make me feel better. I would be happier if the mountain was raised by toil, by sweat, by work, by sacrifice. Yes, take the earth from our own gardens. That would make me feel better.
You're just making it impossible.
No, Mr. Morgan, I am not.
Johnny gets to his feet.
Johnny?
The villagers turn round to look at him, but he remains silent, as if plucking up the courage to speak.
Well,
no, listen.
In France, we dug trenches 10 miles long. We took earth from here and built hills there. We moved fields. You wouldn't believe what we did.
Reverend Jones looks close to tears.
It's possible, it's just hard work. I'll help.
And that's how it all started. The Reverend had an idea, but Morgan had a better one, which the Reverend altered, and Johnny believed possible. Of course, it didn't change the fact that Morgan the Goat wouldn't talk to Reverend Jones. And Reverend Jones wouldn't talk to Morgan the Goat. And Johnny could rarely talk to anyone.
Sergeant. Gentlemen.
Mr. Anson, on behalf of the village, we would like to convince you to persuade Mr. Garrett to stay longer and measure the mountain again.
Again? Well, I'm sorry, but I think today's reading was accurate.
We're going to add 20 feet.
What do you mean, add 20 feet?
It is legal, isn't it?
Heights of other mountains sometimes include burial mounds, even coal tips. Yeah.
Well, now, that is true. Permanent features are sometimes allowed, but...
Good. 20 feet it is, then.
We can't possibly wait while you, add 20 feet. I mean, how are you going to do this?
Never you mind. We'll manage. You just convince Mr. Garrod.
No, I know I'd be wasting my breath. We have a very tight schedule, and Mr. Garrod's very eager to get on.
Oh, we're asking.
No, it's very late. It's very late. So if you don't mind, we will be leaving first thing in the morning. Thank you.
Aye, it's a damn shame.
Don't worry. I'm not going anywhere.
Sorry, Morgan. I missed that. I must be going deaf in this year, man.
I said good night, Sergeant.
Aye, aye. Good night now.
Morgan, I need 2 pounds of sugar.
2 pounds?
Shh! It's rationed.
I know it's rationed.
Come on, Ivor. This is a national emergency.
Oh, yes, but 2 pounds?
I don't want to tell people that it failed because of you, Ivor.
So, are they staying?
Oh, I think I won them over, my love. I think I won them over.
For God's sake, Anson, crank harder.
I'm doing my very best. Perhaps you'd like to have a try.
You'll have to exert
yourself a little bit. What did you say?
Trouble, gentlemen?
Yes. I'm afraid so. Oh.
Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
Mr. Morgan, by the way, I was wondering, what happened to the flagpole?
Dry rot.
Dry rot? In Wales.
At the top of Funangaro, the sergeant and 2 other villagers are raising the flagpole into an upright position.
That looks more than 20 foot, man.
Oh, it's 20.
Bloody hell. We're going to need a lot of earth to cover that.
Aye. It is not 9 o'clock.
Good morning.
Reverend Jones.
Am I disturbing you?
I thought you were one of the children.
Just what we need to talk about. Today is an historic day. Historic. A day which generations will talk about for years to come. Is there news from the front? No. The news is here. The news is up there. Today, we are building a mountain. And I want your pupils to help.
My pupils! To labor, to help you falsify the height of it.
To falsify? Oh, Mr. Davis, both your sense of community and your vocabulary leave much to be desired.
So? Well,
Well, what?
Well, difficult to tell. And by now you probably flooded it. We'd best leave it for 10 minutes. Fancy a drink?
He leads George away and Anson follows behind, leaving the car parked outside the inn with the bonnet open. Moments later, Reverend Jones creeps up beside the car. His hands shaking, he gets a sharp object out of his pocket, then offers up a prayer. He stabs the tire.
No, I do not what the holy man said. Bread of heaven, bread of heaven.
There you are. Standing at that barley lemon.
I'm busy. Refreshments? You get that.
What shall I say to them?
Say anything. Just push it to the garage and take the engine apart.
Yeah, but I've never taken one of these apart. It isn't a two-stroke.
Well, now's your chance to learn.
What if I can't put it back together again?
You'll have done a great service.
Right, let's get this down to the garage, yeah?
Quite.
When it rains, it pours, eh?
So, do you know who's behind this?
I don't know what you're suggesting.
What I am suggesting, Mr. Williams, is that our problems seem highly coincidental with my qualification of your mountain as a hill. I am beginning to suspect childish revenge, bad sportsmanship.
Stop! Now stop before you say something that you will regret. Yes, it's true, a lot of people are upset. But to think that anyone would... Mr. Garrett, sir, we are an honorable people.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It just seems very, very odd.
Well, let's forget that for now. Get this down to the garage.
And how long do you think the repairs will take, exactly?
Oh, I'll have you on your way in no time.
Good. Because otherwise we shall have to make alternative arrangements.
No need for that, gentlemen. Now, if you'd kindly remove your luggage and push me.
Push!
Morgan strides up to the back door of a small house, where a middle-aged woman is sitting outside chopping vegetables.
Coming in? He's sleeping. Night shift.
I have to see him.
He's not going anywhere for you.
Wake him, woman. This is a matter of life and death.
George and Anson are pushing their car along the road with Williams behind the wheel. In the distance, crowds of villagers are busy ploughing and digging a field. Some are shoveling earth into metal buckets.
We've chosen a hot day for it.
Better than rain.
But it's going to rain later.
Well, all the better to refresh us, you see. Be optimistic. Now, go on, dig.
Kill that third one, quick.
Ask some house on the way into Cardiff. You can't miss it.
But, Morgan, I'm working nights.
There's some of us working day and night. I don't want to be telling people it all failed because of Tommy Two-Stroke.
Worn out, George and Anson push their car the last few feet into Williams's garage.
Capital, capital. Hey,
let me just get my tools.
When we were talking about Llewellyn the last, you will remember that... Come in.
We've come for the children. We need them at home.
Well, this is most irregular.
The children are helping the adults load soil into the back of wooden carts. As large numbers toil away, digging, a procession of carts full of earth set off, accompanied by more villagers. At the foot of Funangaru, Morgan's manning a stall as the procession of villagers approaches. Back at the school, a despondent-looking Davis sits at his desk, staring into space. The classroom is empty apart from one child, who has her hand up.
Go on. Go on home.
She hurries out. Carrying a bucket of earth in one hand and hanging onto his hat with the other, Reverend Jones reaches the top of Funangaru. The first of the villagers are following behind him. The first buckets of earth are tipped at the foot of the flagpole. As the locals troop up one by one, discharging the contents of their metal pails, a marker on the flagpole shows the earth has now reached a level of 4 feet.
I can't say I like this village. It's altogether far too quiet.
Yes, I noticed. I rather like it.
Do you think he has a clue about what he's doing?
Well, he certainly is stripping it with great confidence.
I know, but...
I'm afraid I don't know the first thing about motor cars.
Unfortunately, neither do I.
Aha! I think, gentlemen, I have found the problem.
And what's that?
Well, I don't know the English word, but in Welsh, we call it a Bethengalw.
What?
A Bethengalw.
Yeah, close enough.
And where can we get a replacement?
Ooh, Cardiff.
Cardiff?
We'll send Tommy Two-Stroke when he gets back.
Tommy Two-Stroke approaches a grand country house on his motorbike. One of the serving maids, an attractive dark-haired woman in her 20s, approaches him.
Tommy?
I thought...
Never mind what you thought. What the hell are you doing here?
Morgan sent me.
What does Morgan want? It's Thursday. I've got my work.
He wants you to come right away.
And lose my job?
It's an emergency. He said, tell her. I can't do it without her.
Can't do without me?
Something like that.
Some of the locals are taking a break at Morgan's stall.
Maple change. Thank you. Ah! Morning, Reverend.
Don't you good morning, Reverend. This is typical. While the entire village, with a notable exception of Davis the school, toil in this heroic task, you have applied your labor to making a profit and a further disseminating the evil of alcohol.
Now, Reverend, I think the heat is getting to your good temper. I'm supplying a service.
A true service would be free.
Trust me, I'm making no profit.
Oh, dear. Trust him. The day has yet to dawn when I will trust you.
Oh, come on, George, it's not the end of the world. Just means we'll have to stay here for another few days. Is there any transport for hire at all?
No, everything's been used for the...
Yes? For the what?
The war.
Oh, the war, yes.
I thought I had a train last night, so is there a railway station here?
Well...
It's a simple question. Is there or is there not a railway station?
Well, not really.
Not really.
Anson and George arrive at the small railway station. The station master, a middle-aged man with dark hair and moustache, is peering into a wicker basket when they walk into his office.
Ah. Morning. Do you have a train timetable?
Trains?
Yes, trains.
You're English, are you?
Anson?
Yes, yes, we are, yes. And we'd like to catch a train.
No trains.
Good God, man, I just heard one.
A call. Yeah, there's call trains all day, call trains all night, but no passenger trains. You don't see any passengers, do you?
The never-ending procession of villagers carrying buckets continues. George and Anson arrive back at the inn. A friendly local nods to them, then gives a whistle as soon as they've gone inside. An army of villagers carrying buckets hurries past. While George collapses on his bed, oblivious, Anson gazes in wonder at the hillside, which is teeming with locals. At the top of Funangaru, there's now a huge mound of brown earth. Reverend Jones stands on top of it, along with Johnny and the two Thomases. The marker on the flagpole shows the level at around 14 feet.
the good Lord took a day to divide heaven and earth, we can't expect to do better. And we've broken the back of it. That's the important thing.
We haven't broken the back of it.
Yes, we have, Bach. We're almost up to 14 feet.
We need more as we get higher and the base grows wider.
He's right. Oh, dear. Pessimists, all of you. And you. You. You said it would rain.
And it will.
God.
Tommy Two-Stroke arrives back in the village with the maid riding Pillion.
Morgan, what the devil's going on? I have Tommy Two-Stroke coming to the house with a desperate message.
Desperate? That's the word, Betty. Desperate times, desperate measures, desperate Englishmen.
You had better not be suggesting what I think you're suggesting.
Anson comes downstairs into the pub.
Could I possibly have a glass of beer?
Do I look like a barmaid?
Barmaid? Never. I'm surprised that you, Mr. Anson, making a mistake like that. This is our honoured guest, Miss Elizabeth.
I simply assumed because you were behind the bar.
Oh, well, I like my regulars to feel that this isn't a pub. It's a home away from home. Oh. Back so soon? Shame. Difficulty with the breathing again. Terrible trouble with her chest. I knew you were returning to Cardiff too soon. I told you so. Oh, she soldiers on under adversity. What can I get you to drink, yeah?
Pint of bitter, please.
Coming up.
And put it on my account.
Your account?
To show there's no hard feelings.
Oh, really, there's no need for that. Thank you anyway. Reginald Anson.
Elizabeth, miss, and it would be my pleasure.
Well, enjoy your drinks. I'm sure you've a lot to talk about.
He hurries off.
I'm afraid, Mr. Morgan, does Sue like to discuss one's private matters in public? Terribly bad taste, I find. Quite common.
Well, you can rely on me for complete discretion.
I'm sure. Now, would you excuse me? I gave up my first real, honest job.
Mr. Garrett, sir!
Ah, excuse me.
What can I do you for?
George walks into the bar with a sandwich and joins Anson at his table.
Anson, there's dirty work at the crossroads. I just spoke to Morgan about staying another night, and he wasn't the least bit surprised.
Oh, no. You shouldn't jump to conclusions. Williams, the garage man, had already told him that the car was inoperable.
He had? Oh, I see. I can't be too careful in foreign climes.
Well, it's only Wales.
It's still foreign, Reginald.
I understand. I do, completely. Especially since they are English.
Morgan, you're missing the point.
Oh, you are missing the point, girl. All you have to do is charm the old fool so his days don't seem so empty.
Morgan, your head's empty. All this for just a map.
Just a map? Is that what Tommy Two-Stroke said? Half-wit. Just a map. Maps, dear Betty, are the undergarments of a country. They give shape to continents. You...
Oh, George, let me introduce you. This is Miss Elizabeth from Cardiff.
Come for the good mountain air.
And this is Mr. George Garrard.
Pleased to meet you.
I'm sure.
Reverend Jones makes his way up a flight of stone steps. Noticing the first drops of rain falling at his feet, he looks up at the sky anxiously and holds out his hand. The two Thomases are at home.
I said it would.
My God, it reminds me of the monsoons in the tropics. So have you ever been to the tropics? Could be. awful mudslides on nights like these.
Morgan looks up at the sky nervously. At night, in the rain, the marker on Funangaro shows 10 feet.
William! William!
Morgan! We need tarpaulins up the boat, quick! All our work will be washed away! That's the only one I've got!
What? That'll do!
Morgan!
Get Johnny Shell Shot to get up the mountain, quick!
And Morgan!
Oh, I can't do it all myself! Do you want me to have to tell people it all failed because of you?
Nearly there, Johnny boy. Nearly there.
At the top of Funangaro, the level's now 9 feet. Johnny stands in the rain and lightning, screaming. Williams prizes the tarpaulin out of Johnny's hands and staggers over to the mound, where he starts spreading it out. While Johnny lies on the ground, shaking and shivering, Williams desperately wraps the tarpaulin around the top of the mound, anchoring it to the flagpole.
Through Palestine, and then from there on into Cairo, and finally from there we went on into Aden.
Do you hear that, Miss Elizabeth? Mr. Garrett's been to Aden.
Aden? Have you been to Aden, Mr. Anson?
No. Not yet, but it sounds fascinating.
Another for you, Mr. Garrett? You all right there, Mr. Anson?
I'll have another, and one for Mr. Anson. Put them on my account.
Thank you very much. How charming to be treated to a drink by a lady.
Oh, Miss Elizabeth's benevolence knows no bounds.
Bloody hell! There's only sun and thunder and bloody lightning when it took a poop like a half man.
They lay Johnny on the floor.
About the mound. We saved your mound, all right. You can't leave him here. You should take him to Blood's.
I've done enough for one night.
Anson looks down at the shivering Johnny with concern.
Get some towels and a blanket, quickly.
Damn shame, poor chap. I saw a lot of this sort of thing at Sebastopol.
Yeah, bugger Sebastopol, George. Give me your jacket.
Come on.
A large brandy, please, quickly. Right, unclench his fingers. Undo his shirt. Get his shirt undone. Oh, unclench his fingers.
All right.
And we'll see if he swallowed his tongue. That's it. Come on. There. This way.
Blood.
What have you done with him?
I didn't do anything. Betty, give the man the brandy.
Betty? So this is Betty? What the bloody hell is she doing here?
No, Blood, you... Don't get the wrong idea. This is another lady with these gentlemen, isn't that right? Huh?
Yes, we're from London now. Can we please get on with helping this poor fellow? He's in deep shock.
There.
Sorry, I thought you were somebody else. Come on, Morgan, help me get him home. There. I know what to do.
All right, gently.
Morgan carries Johnny over his shoulder through the driving rain, with Blood following behind.
Well, I've had far too much excitement for one evening. If you'll excuse me, I'll say good night.
George, good night.
Looking overcome, Anson's left alone in the bar. Betty locks the pub doors, then comes back into the bar.
Oh, don't worry about Morgan. This isn't the first time I've locked up for him. He won't be back tonight. And thank you for helping me with blood.
Oh, it's fine. Just, seem to think to do.
He produces two glasses, and as he walks to the bar with them, she grasps his shoulders and kisses him full on the lips. She gives him a long, lingering kiss.
Good. Well, good night, Miss Elizabeth and...
Betty.
Betty, yes. Thank you for a lovely evening and...
Are you married?
Sorry?
Are you married?
No.
Good night, Mr. Hanson. You're a gentleman.
After a nervous silence, he disappears upstairs, then comes back, realizing he's still carrying the glasses. Morgan stands outside Johnny's bedroom door as Blood tucks him up in bed.
Sleeping quietly?
No thanks to you.
I just go back and lock up. I won't be long.
Don't think for one minute that you're staying here tonight. After what you've done to Johnny.
Blood.
And another thing, Morgan. If this was all for nothing, don't think about darkening my door ever again.
Don't be rash now, girl.
Bugger off, Morgan.
Morgan's outside the pub in the pouring rain, unable to get in.
Betty! Damn and blast!
The next day, in a stable, Morgan's lying asleep in the hay. In the kitchen at the inn, Anson's up and dressed when Betty comes in, wearing a pale dressing gown and with her brown hair hanging loose around her shoulders.
Good morning. Couldn't you sleep? I slept like a log. So quiet without Morgan banging around.
Morning. I thought you might already have gone. You seemed rather impatient last night.
No. I'm no one for running around in the rain. I like to stay snug in a warm bed and just stare at it. Mm-hmm. Everything looks better when it's wet, don't you think?
Morgan's brushing the hay off his jacket.
Are you hungry? Are you looking for something to eat?
I'm famished.
Yes, you look hungry.
Ah, George. Ah, excuse me. Thank you. Right, Anson, the order of the day is sort out this motor car. Mm. Anson.
Yes?
We can't be sitting around here forever waiting for some joker on a motorcycle. We should be off.
Back into England or further into Wales?
Well, sort of north into Wales, really.
If it's raining here, it's raining more there. You might as well wager. And the inn's in North Wales.
Come on, girl, let me in.
Like sleeping in stables.
So wet and melting.
Morning.
Morgan bundles Betty into the larder.
So?
So what?
You know, last night, Miss Elizabeth and the English.
She grabs a knife and points it at him.
Firstly,
Miss Elizabeth died in her sleep. And secondly, they're not animals like you, Morgan. They're gentlemen.
She pushes past him and marches back out. Betty and Anson are playing draughts.
You're not very good at this, are you? Come on, concentrate.
That fool said he'd be here by 11 o'clock. I'll have some news, he said. I'll have my part from Cardiff, he said. It's almost sodding noon. God, I hate the Welsh.
The roads are probably bad with the rain.
Well, come on, Anson.
Sorry, where are we going?
Well, where the hell do you think? To get the car.
To get the car, yes.
The truth is that while we Welsh like to believe that it was the mountains that beat the successive invaders, it was really the weather that comes with mountains. It was the rain that defeated every invader.
Anson.
Yes, simple rain.
In the teeming rain, George opens the side door of their car and water pours out. He shuts it again in frustration. Clad in raincoats and hats, George and Anson enter the local post office.
Yes, sir?
I would like... Oh, God. Anson?
We'd like to send a telegram. Yes, sir.
At the railway station ticket office.
I have been advised by my department that I can take a train from here to Pontypridd. A passenger train.
Yes.
But you told me that there were no passenger trains.
We're going east. I didn't know you wanted to go north.
Why did you assume that I wanted to go east?
You're English. And England is east.
Anson.
Could we possibly then have two first-class and second-class tickets to Pontypridd?
To the north.
I'm sorry. You could have gone yesterday, but you can't today.
Oh?
Flooding on the line.
Flooding?
Anson and George arrive back at the inn.
Gentlemen, success?
Flooding.
As predicted in the Bible.
Yes, it's interesting, actually, because the passenger trains seem to be affected by the flooding, but the coal trains are running as normal.
Different lines.
Ah, yes, of course. I knew there'd be a simple explanation, George. You see, it's different lines that they're on.
Shut up, Anson. Mm-hmm. Now, please send some more blankets and a bottle of gin to my room. Thank you.
It started raining Thursday night, and it rained all Friday morning. And it rained all Friday afternoon. It seemed that the rain would never stop. And for the first time, the Welsh and the English were united by the fact that there was nothing to do but wait. But then, on Sunday morning, two miracles occurred. It stopped raining, and miracle of miracles, Morgan the goat talked to Reverend Jones.
Ah, Reverend Jones.
Morgan.
It stopped raining.
Yes, I'm quite aware of that.
There are no trains today.
Yes, there are no trains on the day of the Lord.
Look, what I'm saying is that today is our last chance to build a mountain. But since it's Sunday, everyone will be in chapel.
Chapel will start at 10:30 as usual, Mr. Morgan.
But no one will work on a Sunday without your blessing. And tomorrow, the English will be on the morning train out, and we'll have missed our chance. They have telegrams and tickets and orders from head office. I can't keep them here any longer. It's today or never.
Chapel will start at 10:30, Mr. Morgan. And it would make the good Lord very happy if for once you were here.
In the garden at the inn, Betty's cutting some flowers when Anson comes out and hesitantly approaches her.
Morning.
Yes, it is. A beautiful morning.
They're pretty.
Yes. Not as pretty as me. You're supposed to say that.
Betty! Didn't you hear me calling? I need a clean shirt.
Don't look at me.
Well, I would lend you one, but I'm afraid this is the only clean one I have.
With his stomach bursting out of Anson's ill-fitting shirt, Morgan walks up to the chapel door, then turns away and rubs his face. Reverend Jones is praying fervently. He opens his Bible, and something on one of the pages catches his eye. Psalm 99 reads, "Exalt the Lord our God, and worship at his holy hill." He looks out of the window at Funangaro, then up at the heavens. The congregation rise as Reverend Jones enters the chapel. Morgan pulls on his jacket, then walks in. Reverend Jones and some of the congregation look surprised to see him. He awkwardly and prematurely takes a seat, then everyone else sits back down.
My text for today comes from Psalm 99, verse 9. Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his holy hill.
First thing tomorrow?
Yes. Yes, I'm afraid so. George had some pretty stern orders from London last night, so we're off on the 8:30 train. Or whatever his state of health.
He was very drunk last night. Then the night before. Habit I picked up in Injop.
Yes, I don't think he had enough to do out there, poor chap.
Oh, yeah. You'd go mad, yeah, too.
No, I could live in a place like this. I've enjoyed myself.
You have?
I see it as a prayer made manifest in soil. One day, our children's children will play where we are piling earth. Elderly people will be able to see it from the valley and be reminded of their youth. And therefore, even though it is a Sunday, but especially because it is a Sunday, you will see me immediately after this service climbing Funangaro with God's soil in my hand. And I will build that mound and dedicate it to God. I will build that mound. In memory of our loved ones who will not return from war. And I will build that mound as a humble echo of the great the Lord has given us. And I will build that mound in celebration of the joy our mountain has given us. And I will build that mound knowing that the Lord God is with me. Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his holy hill. Oh, and I expect to see you all. Huh?
up there.
Morgan smiles at the person next to him, then hurries after Reverend Jones as he strides out of the chapel.
Ah, but don't think for 1 minute that you can sell beer on the Sabbath.
I must say, I didn't see what I could usefully do in a place like this.
It's easy for you. You can do anything. You're an educated man.
Well, I'm not really qualified to do very much. I could teach, I suppose. Yeah. Sorry, no. I was going to ask you something personal. It was probably indiscreet.
I don't mind.
Well, I just, you know, I know even less about you than I did about, Miss Elizabeth.
Miss Elizabeth. I couldn't keep that up for long. There's nothing very special about me. I'm the kind of girl you usually don't notice. I scuttle in with a tray of tea, bow my head and scuttle out.
I'd notice.
No, you wouldn't. Not usually. So, can I ask you something personal? How come you aren't in France?
Well, I was. I went out with the first wave in 1914. I was at Verdun. I came back like Johnny.
Oh. I'm sorry. But you're all right now. You just need some looking after. Oh, what on earth?
All right, boys, I see you up there. You got the miners now, too.
It's like a carnival.
You're terribly responsible, eh?
I hope your Mr. Garrett's ready. Of a mountain for him to measure before tea time.
An empty bottle in his hand, George wakes up.
Tea, voila!
It's Anson, George.
Anson. Morning.
I just thought I might pop up the hill. It seems the villagers have made a little tiny alteration to the height. I thought I might measure it. Nothing much better to do, sir.
Capital. Good for you. You could probably use the fresh air.
Well, that's what I thought, yeah. You don't want to join me?
Where?
Up the hill.
Oh, good God, no. I'll stay here if you don't mind. Lots of paperwork. Scats to catch up on and such.
Absolutely. Right. So, you don't want me to open a window or anything?
Betty's waiting outside the inn.
I'm not sure that I can rely on Mr. Garrett. But, the thing is, I will need an assistant. You wouldn't,
Me?
Why not?
Well, I've never been to Abyssinia. Or Aden. Or Sebastopol. And I can't speak with a posh accent for long.
Well, I think we can get over that.
I'm just a maid servant.
Well, I don't think the word just could apply to you about anything.
Was that a compliment?
Yes, and now I'm going to blush, so, would you help me? Please.
Since you said please, and you're blushing.
No.
Yes, I will.
Good. Then prepare the engineer's transit, please.
What?
I'll show you.
Williams and the two Thomases unroll the tarpaulin from the top of the mound, then bend down and inspect it. Crowds of villagers, men, women and children, are shoveling earth into buckets. Reverend Jones is leading them up Funangaro in a procession of horse and carts. He looks back and gives a friendly wave. Buckets in hand, they arrive at the mound.
This is extraordinary.
When Morgan gets a bee in his bonnet.
In the fading daylight, the armies of villagers are still hard at work, heaving cartloads of soil to the top of the mound. One by one, the buckets of soil are passed up the line to the summit.
Yeah, I think they're going to succeed.
Hello.
Hello, hello. We'll have a mountain for your map.
Oh, indeed, I think you will. I just hope you can finish it today.
We lost a lot in the rain, but we still have a chance.
Perhaps you should cover it with turf.
Turf? You mean sod? Sod? You'll need good sod.
A lot of good sod.
The two Thomases make their way to the edge of the hill and look down, pointing at a green rugby field far below.
This is an outrage! How dare you! Have the council been informed? Does anyone have written permission? I mean, look at this. It's madness.
Stop acting so English.
Die out. Let them rise. Carry on.
A long line of horse and carts carry rolls of turf up the hill. Still, the digging and carrying continues.
Absolutely everyone climbed Funangaro that day. Except Davis the school, of course. And Johnny, who was happy to help down in the valley, but too fearful to go up Funangaro again.
Pushing a wheelbarrow of turf, the sergeant passes Johnny.
Thank you, Johnny.
Johnny stands mute and expressionless, gazing at the hill. High above, in the distance, lines of villagers snake along the hillside, like armies of worker ants. Johnny stares at them, looks slowly downwards, then glances over his shoulder as if coming to a decision. Gathering his determination, he swallows hard, then calls out.
I'll take that.
Anson stands at the very top of the mound, surrounded by the industrious villagers. He looks out through his telescope.
There's not much daylight left for a measurement.
We'll stop standing around and I'll... Come on!
Anson's working at the mound when Williams comes over.
Look, I'm terribly sorry about the motor car. I covered it with tarpaulin, but I don't know. The wind must have...
Would that be this tarpaulin by any chance?
Yes.
That's all right, Mr. Williams. I wouldn't have missed this for the world.
The villagers break out into spontaneous applause as Johnny arrives, pushing a wheelbarrow. Williams goes to greet him, first putting an arm around his shoulder, then giving him a hug.
It was touch and go to finish while there was still light for Mr. Anson to measure. And there are many who still say we would have succeeded, but fate had one more trick up her sleeve.
Reverend Jones heads towards the mound carrying a bucket. Looking exhausted and unsteady, he begins to stagger.
Reverend Jones?
He collapses.
Later, when we all talked, he realized that Reverend Jones had climbed Funangaro 5 or 6 times that day. Enough to make a young, fit man stiff. And definitely too much for a man of 82. Yes, we didn't know that either. But Reverend Jones was 82. And we thought he was just in his 60s.
Morgan! Morgan the goat!
Morgan! He wants me? Yes.
Looking apprehensive, Morgan crouches down beside him.
Come closer. Take my hand now. Look. I know I can count on you. I want to...
Everyone crowds round as he whispers to Morgan.
Get Jones the JP.
The sergeant verified death. Jones the JP would have to consecrate the ground before the Reverend Jones could have his dying wish.
This plot of earth at the summit of Funangaro is duly consecrated to receive the mortal remains of our dear friend and spiritual leader, the Reverend Robert Jones.
His coffin is carried up the hill. The coffin is lowered into the mound. Villagers have gathered at the base, carrying flaming torches. After the burial is completed, the locals slowly make their way off. Also carrying torches, Anson and Betty join the villagers.
So you'll be taking the first train out in the morning?
Yes. Yes, I'm afraid we will.
Fair's fair. We had a damn good try, didn't we? If it wasn't for the Reverend...
If it wasn't for the Reverend, it wouldn't have been built in the first place.
Aye, true enough.
With a sigh, Morgan, Sergeant Thomas, Williams and the two Thomases make their way off.
Come on.
Well, it will be measured again. I mean, perhaps we'll even come back through here on our return and...
You won't be back. This isn't a place that people like you come back to.
Well, I'll try. I'll really try.
I'll try. Is that the best you can do? After all they've done, all this work, how would you like them to say it failed because of you?
But what am I supposed to do? Measure it in the dark? Wait up here till the first light of dawn and then race down and...
Sun's up at 5?
That's only a few hours away. I'd keep you company.
Well, if it is that late and the sun will be up soon, I may as well stay here and wait for dawn. After all, we've come this far.
Night.
Yes, sir.
Anson gives them a wave while Betty stands smiling tearfully. The men's torches join the trail of people, forming a line that snakes down the hillside. Their tiny figures, as well as the mound they leave behind, silhouetted against the fading daylight. As Morgan arrives back at the inn, Blodd's waiting outside. He's just about to walk inside when he turns back to her.
Drink, Blodd.
Good night, Morgan.
She smiles contentedly. Anson and Betty are standing on the summit. Morgan finds George behind the bar.
They're in chapel, it's Sunday. What's yours?
At the summit, Anson gives Betty a lingering kiss and her hat flies off. They stand embracing one another in the darkness.
And so it was that Betty and Anson stayed a night on Funangaro. Now you know what the Welsh say about people who stay on mountain peaks at night, don't you? They become poets, madmen, very, very wise, or...
The next morning, they make their way down in the sunshine, sharing a kiss as they go. Anson and Betty enter the village, followed by a brass band. He brandishes a document, holding it aloft triumphantly.
And when they descended, it was to announce that Funangaro was indeed a mountain of 1,002 feet, and that they were engaged to be married. Yes, it was an odd courtship, but one befitting a man who went up a hill but came down a mountain.
They're applauded by hordes of smiling villagers. Anson reaches into the crowd and shakes some hands. Morgan emerges from the inn, also smiling. When Anson shows him the document, Morgan shakes his hand warmly. George is asleep in bed. Adults and children are smiling and clapping as the brass band plays on.
And should you think this is just a shaggy dog story told by a senile man to his young, impressionable grandson, I'd ask you to come to South Wales, to the village where I was born. And as you drive north from Cardiff, look for the first big hill. Not just a hill, but a mountain. And the children of the people who built it.
In the present day, six pensioners are standing on top of the grassy mound next to a tall burial stone with Reverend Jones's name on it.
However, just before this film was made, the mountain was remeasured and found to be 997 feet. Thus the mound had settled back into a hill.
They look down as the voice appears to be coming from beneath the stone. Then they beckon over a long line of people approaching with wheelbarrows and buckets. Young and old, they snake up the side of the steep, grassy hill on their way to the summit, carrying buckets and wheelbarrows full of soil.